presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Hey, everybody, it's Brandon Adams, the host of Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Thank you so much for being with us here on this Thursday. Fun show for us coming up today. We'll have Seth Emerson on the program a little later on, and, of course, we'll spend a lot of time talking about the Georgia Bulldogs, ranked number one in the country by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee earlier this week. And, you know, I was thinking about that this morning coming into the show, and, you know, obviously, the toughest part about getting to number one is staying there. We understand that in some form or fashion. We see this in a lot of walks of life. Think about, you know, lottery winners. You know, you win $1 million in the lottery. I mean, how many magazine stories have you read over the years about lottery winners not being able to hold on to that money, not being able to keep that money? Same thing for professional athletes. They sign the big contract. You know, there's stats out there that some 85% of those pro athletes aren't able to hold on to that money that when you get it. I mean, it's almost as if in life, staying rich is just as difficult as getting rich. And when it comes to the college football playoffs, the number one ranking, it may be true there as well. That staying at number one is just as difficult as getting to number one. And for Georgia, the question becomes of how do the Dogs actually stay at number one now that they've gotten there? Well, I think we have some evidence to sort of point the way in that direction. And an example of that I want to show you here, it comes from a group of folks known as Sports Source Analytics. Now, you may not have heard of Sports Source Analytics before, but here's who they are. They are a company contracted by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, and they provide data to the committee about, you know, various stats involving college football. They've also got a Twitter feed. I follow them on Twitter. And yesterday they tweeted something out that I thought was kind of interesting. And I think it does give us some insight into Georgia here the rest of the way. What Sports Source Analytics says is, so far in 2017, the FBS team winning the sack battle has won 76% of the time. FBS team winning the tackle for loss battle has won 67% of the time. So if you get more sacks to your opponent, you win more than three-quarters of the time. If you get more tackles for loss than your opponent, you win two-thirds of the time. So if you want to sum it up right there, very simply and succinctly, Georgia at number one, how does it stay there? Well, it's obviously got to win games the rest of the season. How does it win games? Well, according to those folks who tabulate and sort of crunch numbers for college football all day long, every single week, that winning the sack battle, winning the tackle for loss battle, is a key aspect of how you win games in college football, especially here in this modern age. And here's where things get a little bit interesting for Georgia. Because while Georgia has dominated virtually all of its opponents all four, you know, so far this season, when you look ahead to some of its games coming up, that's not necessarily been true. If you're listening, I'll tell you about this. If you're watching, you can see some of these numbers on the screen. Georgia thus far has 15 sacks on the season. But look at the upcoming opponents for Georgia. Listen to these sack numbers. The team that Georgia's going to play on Saturday, South Carolina, they've got more sacks than Georgia this year. Gamecocks have 17, Dogs have just 15. Auburn, who Georgia will play in 2 weeks, and right now Dogs look to be a point spread underdog to, Auburn's got way more sacks than Georgia, 25 compared to the 15. Even Kentucky has more than Georgia. Kentucky's got 19 sacks. Georgia has just 15. Georgia Tech, almost as many as Georgia. Yellow Jackets have 14. And if you want to sort of extrapolate ahead to a potential SEC championship game, Alabama, if the Dogs were to play them, Alabama also significantly more sacks than Georgia, 23 compared to the 15 for the Dogs. Also kind of true when you look at tackles for loss here as well. Look at the tackle for loss numbers for Georgia this season. Dogs better than South Carolina. UGA's got 48. Gamecocks have just 45. But once again, look ahead to 2 weeks from now. Auburn, way more tackles for loss, 56 to the 48. Kentucky, Dogs doing a little better than the Wildcats, 48 to 42. Way more than Georgia Tech, who has just 31. But once again, if you think about playing a Alabama team in the SEC championship game, Alabama's also got way more than Georgia. Alabama, 54 tackles for loss this season. Georgia, just 48. So what's kind of interesting about these stats to me is that it shows you an area in which Georgia's going to have to get better throughout the rest of the season if it wants to keep pace with the SEC's best. And for what it's worth, Georgia's about to play a couple of these SEC best. Either they'll play Auburn twice, likely, or they'll play Alabama, maybe even more likely, in the SEC championship game. Two teams that have both been better than Georgia at those two key stats that Sports Source Analytics describe. Now, for what it's worth, Georgia took a big step forward in the sack and tackle for loss department against Florida last week. Georgia did come up with 5 sacks against the Gators, had 8 tackles for loss. But this has kind of been one of those things that's been a little bit of a work in progress for Georgia all season long. In fact, earlier in the season, Kirby Smart kind of talked about areas in which some ways he's seeing improvement from the Georgia pass rush, and in some ways he still needs to see some more. Here's Kirby from a few weeks ago.
That's one of the big things we've tried to improve. So you can improve your pass rush by bringing more guys, or you can rush 4 better. And obviously I like to rush 4 better than bring in more guys. So we've tried to find ways to do it. But it's not always been exactly what we wanted, what we want to create, but it's certainly improving.
And I think almost all football fans would agree with Kirby Smart on that. When you have to get too exotic with your blitzes, when you have to start sending a bunch of extra guys, that's only going to hurt your secondary, and it's only going to make it easier for good quarterbacks, and Georgia's about to play some of those. Bentley on Saturday for South Carolina, Stidham in a couple of weeks, Jalen Hurts potentially in an SEC championship game. Pretty good collection of quarterbacks upcoming for Georgia. If you have to blitz guys to get to that quarterback, it just makes it easier for quarterbacks to pick you apart with what you're doing in the passing game. So Georgia fans would agree with Kirby Smart that you want to try to find a pass rush, you know, just sending 4, but one way or another, you've got to find that pass rush, because if Georgia were to allow an Auburn or an Alabama to exceed Georgia in those two key aspects, the tackles for loss department, the sacks department, then it's going to become hard for Georgia to stay where it is right now, which is the number one team in the country. Now, of course, the good news for Georgia in this regard, when you think about trying to maintain the edge Georgia's enjoyed over some teams, keep pace with programs like Alabama and Auburn, who are very good at this. Georgia luckily has some really nice senior leadership kind of contributing to this statistically, and also in the intangible area off the field as well, the leadership. One of those guys is Lorenzo Carter, who had another big game for Georgia on Saturday against Florida, had a sack, had a tackle for loss, and he's done a little bit of everything for Georgia thus far this season. And the personality that he brings to the table, he seems to almost be glowing right now, just given the success that he's enjoying individually, his defense around him enjoying collectively. In fact, Kirby Smart was also asked about that on Tuesday, about the demeanor of Carter right now. And Kirby said, listen, this is something we've seen before.
Well, he's had that since like 9th, 10th grade year of high school. I mean, he's always been a bright-eyed, smiling kid, and got a great family, and he enjoys the game. He's just really a happy kid. I mean, he enjoys practice. He's fun to be around, except for when he doesn't practice good. And then I get mad at him, and he still smiles, so I get madder. But he's a bright kid.
Funny stuff there from Kirby Smart talking about Lorenzo Carter, who I do think is a key part of this Georgia discussion here. And listen, you know, for the most part, what we've seen from Georgia this year has been dominant games. With the exception of a road win at number 3 Notre Dame, every other game this year for Georgia has been a blowout. And because of a good team playing mostly blowout games, you look at most aspects of the Georgia game plan and say, hey, no need to change this, just keep doing what you're doing. Georgia's ability to run the football, you couldn't ask for much more than what you're getting from that. Georgia's ability to stop the run, for the most part, that's been pretty stellar thus far this season, with the occasional sort of blip on the radar, but for the most part, that's been exceptional. Even Jake Fromm's play as a freshman, as a quarterback, you know, in the limited time he's been asked to throw, for the most part, when he has thrown the ball, he's been incredibly efficient. No real change needed there. I think when you look at these stats, though, and compare, you know, Georgia's ability to sack the quarterback, Georgia's ability to get in the backfield and wreak havoc on ball, carriers and the things going on in the backfield. In comparison to SEC teams that Georgia's likely to play in the rest of the season, Auburn and Alabama, this is an area in which Georgia does need to improve. The talent's there, the leadership's there. My guess is when Georgia's called upon into duty to play these teams, my guess is we'll see a better version of Georgia in both the pass rush and when it comes to tackling for loss. It should be a fun November heading into December for the Bulldogs. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Thanks so much for being with us here on our program today. No matter how you access us, whether it be on Facebook Live each and every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook page, thanks for being with us. Of course, if you're also in the Athens area, you can listen to us on the radio. We're at noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Thanks for listening to us on the radio there in the Classic City. And then in podcast form, wherever podcasts are found, iTunes, SoundCloud. We'll post the show for you at theworldfamousdognation.com. I actually had a really interesting comment when we posted the show at dognation.com yesterday. I want to get to that here coming up in just a moment. But we're still looking back and still basking in the glow of a 42-7 win for the Georgia Bulldogs over the Florida Gators in this past weekend. And of course, thinking about that blowout makes us think about going back to Jacksonville next October and doing it all over again. 360 days from now, we'll get a chance to do that. Yes, still doing that Gatorator countdown because Florida's going to hire themselves a coach. They're going to try to rebuild their program. And one way or another, it's still going to be a big game for Georgia next season. It's the rivalry that matters the most for UGA fans. Should be anyway. I've said that now for more than a year, and I'll keep saying it for the next 360 days. And by the way, speaking of a great time in Jacksonville, our Dog Nation invasion to Jacksonville was a big part of that. We would not have been able to enjoy that without our sponsors, including our friends at R.S. Andrews. And listen, I'm so thankful for my nice, toasty furnace and my nice, toasty, warm house here on these cool nights here so far in the end of October leading to November. And if you want your house to be nice and cozy and comfortable like mine is, you want that guaranteed $99 furnace tune-up for my friends at R.S. Andrews to make sure it works the way it's supposed to. They're clean, screened, trained, and timely tech, so give your system a thorough check, and they'll make sure it's working all winter long. Don't be freezing cold on Christmas Day. Let R.S. Andrews come and check you out. Thanksgiving, you're having your family over for dinner. Don't be teeth chattering there at the dinner table. Get the $99 furnace tune-up from my friends at R.S. Andrews. They're online at rsandrews.com. All right, Seth Emerson coming up in just a few minutes. A really fun conversation with him. He's had a lot to say about Georgia being number one. We'll ask him about that. And as I said to our video audience before the show started, we'll also talk to Seth about what it's like being at practice with the number one team in the country. Any noticeable difference? Seth will tell us about all of that coming up. Before that, though, I mentioned this, that I got a really good comment yesterday. You know, when we post the audio version of the show, the podcast at DogNation.com. Now, many of you, watch on Facebook Live or you listen on iTunes, you don't see the show posted at DogNation.com. But we post the show there, and there's a chance for people to put some Facebook comments in the comment section on that. And I got a really good comment yesterday about Georgia being number one and why one UGA fan thought that was a really good thing. Let me show you this comment on the screen here. It comes from Thomas Childers, and here's what he says. I look to look at the number one ranking like this. I want the committee and college football fans around the nation getting used to seeing the Dogs up there. Even if the championship doesn't happen this year, we'll be in the discussion next year, and the year after that, and so on. Kirby has the team relevant again, and it feels good. I think that Thomas Childers' point on this is such a good one. There is, a little bit of a fear and trepidation, if you'll pardon me using a bigger word than I should probably be using. There is a little bit of anxiety here about Georgia being in a spot that it hasn't been in a while. Some fans are just flat out nervous about it. But Thomas's point there in the comment section on Facebook yesterday is right. Okay, Georgia's number one here now. But this is not a one-and-done situation where Georgia's going to maximize this, otherwise it's never going to be back here again. The truth is, Georgia may actually appear at number one frequently over the course of the next few years. Now, nothing's guaranteed, but this may be the first of many appearances at number one, and it's about time the country gets used to that, about time the country sort of realizes that this is a Georgia program that's going to have some permanence. It's going to be here to stay for a while. To kind of prove his point, I saw this tweet from Richard Deitch, who's a media reporter for SI.com, and he kind of put out the 15 highest-rated college football games so far for 2017, and Georgia actually does not appear on any of the list of 15 highest-rated games so far for 2017. I guess I was a little surprised the Notre Dame game didn't make it from the prime time early in the month of September, but all the other games involve teams not UGA. So it's an example of kind of what the commenter was mentioning a moment ago. The country's just not used to seeing Georgia at number one, and now the attention's going to grow because of that number one ranking, and assuming that Georgia keeps playing well, all of a sudden now the nation's going to start paying a lot more attention to UGA. And I guess what some people outside the Dog Nation bubble might say here is, well, listen, you know, Georgia is actually better now than it was expected to be. People thought Kirby Smart might build this program up 3 or 4 years from now. It's actually happening to some people's eyes quicker than maybe it would have been anticipated. Although to those people, Kirby Smart said this week, listen, there's no timeline when it comes to this kind of stuff. There is no schedule in which achievement occurs. Here's how he explained it.
I'll be honest with you, there's no schedule. I mean, they don't write a book on it and say, this time you got to be here and this time you got to be here. You know, it's not really done that way. It's done each year independent of the previous. And this year's independent of last year, just like next year will be independent of this year. And you try to reshape your team based on the personality it takes on. We're worried about this year and we're worried about South Carolina right now. That's all I'm thinking about.
I think that's well said there by Kirby Smart. And as we said on yesterday's program, I think there are two very different approaches here. There is the approach that the fan takes. There's the approach that the coaches and players take. To the extent that it's possible, the coaches and players are supposed to block all this kind of stuff out. They are supposed to avoid that noise, as coaches are fond of saying. But fans, I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do to block out. You're going to read about this and hear it spoken about on TV, you know, see it on the internet all the time. And therefore, I think the only approach for a fan is, like our commenter said before, just embrace it. accepted as possibly the first of many appearances at number one as the nation gets fully acquainted with just what Kirby Smart's doing here at Georgia and just how dominant this program might be in the years ahead. Before I bring on Seth Emerson, let me also remind you, we're going to be at Marlowe's next week, but I told you wrong earlier this week. Normally we're at Marlowe's on Tuesday nights, but next week for the Marlowe's in Roswell, we're going to be there starting at on Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday at the Marlowe's in Roswell. That's where we're going to be, so we'll look forward to being with you there. Marlowe's and Roswell coming up this Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope you'll be there with us. Now, it's a great day to have you here on Dog Nation Daily. We got a lot of fun coming up. For now, though, let's get ready to talk to Seth Emerson.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Well, say hello to Seth Emerson here on Dog Nation Daily. Always fun to talk to him, especially fun, I guess, when you're talking about the number one team in the country. And Seth, let me, I guess, start with this, if you don't mind. You know, you kind of come at this from the analytical perspective, the objective journalist perspective. You hear what coaches say. Kirby Smart's not the only coach to ever speak this way about his team getting the extra attention when it comes to being number one. Do you think, as a guy who's there watching practice every day, being around these coaches, being around these players, does it truly make it harder for a team like Georgia to have the target on its back, the bullseye on its back, or is this just so much coach speak like so many other things that coaches talk about?
It's a little bit of both. I talked to somebody, communicated with somebody, let's just say around the SEC yesterday, who said that Tuesday night was a good night for Will Muschamp and Nick Saban and a bad night for Kirby Smart. You know, we'll see. I mean, I think what Kirby has shown this year, Kirby and this staff, is they've shown just how well they have really coached well, and they have really prepared their team well, mentally and physically. All the concerns that were thrown out last year that were legit when you had an 8-5 team that underperformed and lost at home to Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech and blew leads, those and didn't blow anybody out except for Louisiana Lafayette. Those have all been reversed. Georgia's not done anything wrong this year. You know, their only close game was on the road to what's now the number three team in the country. But we've moved to a new phase now.
Yeah.
They have the target on their back. I don't know that affects South Carolina. I mean, South Carolina knew they were going to be a big underdog, and so what? Maybe a little bit Auburn. I don't know. I think I buy into the revenge tour thing a lot, which is why I've kind of expected Georgia to beat everybody that they lost to last year. And we'll see about Georgia Tech. But, you know, they beat South Carolina and Auburn last year and Kentucky. So could you have a slip up there? I think down the line is where it would really be motivating. Like, Alabama is the type of program that you do wonder whether at some point there is some sort of complacency. Like, yeah, we're always number one. You know, wake us up when we get to the playoffs. You know, nobody in the SEC can contend with us. And then all of a sudden, Alabama's number two, and Georgia is number one, and not by having beaten Alabama. The thing is, we've got like 5 weeks until Alabama and Georgia would play. So maybe by then, Alabama is number one. So I think it's something that's very interesting to talk about right now. I'm not really sure of the immediate effect.
So I think we would probably agree, as a quick follow-up to what you're saying, that Georgia's got some good senior leadership. Chubb, Michelle on the offensive side of the ball, a whole host of defenders. I think you primarily probably think about Carter and Bellamy, but as you've said before, you'll include guys like Aaron Davis and Dominic Sanders in that discussion as well. So here's the thing I'm not sure of. Can good leaders lead a team to a place that the leaders themselves haven't been to? You know, there is no blueprint for Georgia players being number one because Georgia, for the most part, as a program, hasn't been number one that much. So is this a point in which the leadership skills of Chubb, Michelle, and the others, are they, I hate to say diminished because that's not what I mean, but is it harder to lead when you're also dealing with something for the first time?
Well, there is a part of it where you say this may be where the coaches need take over because they're the ones who have been there before. Kirby's been there before. Mel Tucker's been there before. Going down the list on coaches, trying to think, you know, who may have been. Maybe Shane Beamer's been on a staff in Virginia Tech that's been close, you know, that kind of thing. As players, something I was thinking about, I'd like to do the research on this, is, and you may scoff at it, but I do wonder whether there would be some relativism. How many of these players were on high school teams that made runs to state championships. It's not, it doesn't have the glare of college football and the national playoff, but there is, there is some relativeness to that. So that's something that these guys may have to lean on. But yeah, as far as doing this at the college level, nobody on this team was here in 2012. So, and that was a comparable situation. And that team actually handled it well. They had the midseason loss to South Carolina, and then they kind of were playing from behind, but then all of a sudden they were playing from ahead, and they had, I guess, the distraction. I think it was after they beat Auburn, then they had to beat Georgia Tech, even though they knew they were in the SEC title game the next week against Alabama, and they just had to make sure they took care of business against Tech, or else that they wouldn't be playing for national championship. They took care of that. They played well against Alabama but didn't win. But that was handled well, but nobody here was on that team. So, yeah, they have to draw on either their own personal experiences from high school, however comparable they are, or, really depend on Kirby and guys like that who have been through this before.
We played audio a moment ago of Kirby Smart when he was asked about the team being ahead of schedule, better now than people expect them to be, maybe good season some thought would come in 2018, 2019. And I think there are two sides to that discussion. I think they both potentially have validity. On the one hand, pretty much every modern coach that's won a championship other than Dabo Swinney has kind of won it with his first 4 years on the job. That's true going all the way back to, Mack Brown would have been the last one to kind of be a long-tenured coach to win his first national championship. So on the one hand, maybe you could say, well, Georgia's not ahead of schedule compared to other programs that have actually won championships. Coaches typically win them pretty early in their tenure. However, a year ago, Georgia was 4-4. I mean, hard to imagine a team goes from 4-4 to number one in 365 calendar days. Where do you come down on the schedule for achievement that Georgia's on? Is it happening sooner than you would have thought possible, than maybe an objective observer would have thought was possible?
I can't sit here and say I ever at any point wrote that they would be in this position, that they would be number one in the country, demolishing people, and potentially win a chance. Now, let's everyone also take a step back. They could still easily finish like 10-2, and then not even make the SEC title game if Kentucky wins out. Which there's a decent chance that happened. Not that Georgia loses Kentucky and doesn't go, but there's a decent chance. Like if Georgia loses to Auburn and then Kentucky wins the next two, which they could. Georgia and Kentucky are playing for the SEC East title. Now, we'll see. But to get back to your question, I'm saying let's not put cart before the horse.
Sure.
I can't say I sat here and said that all this would be happening. But, I was one of the people who wrote a year-two effect story. You go through history, and this happened. Bob Stoops was very comparable to Kirby Smart in terms of the experience he had when he took over a major conference college job. He won the national championship at Oklahoma in his second year. Nick Saban went from, I think it was 7-6 at Alabama his first year to undefeated and then losing to Florida in the SEC title game his second year, although that wasn't his first coaching job. And there were many examples. I think Urban Meyer was renowned for that, second year everywhere. Pete Carroll, Jim Tressel, all these people did this in their second year. And Will Muschamp, it didn't end well at Florida, but people kind of forget. 2012 was his second year there, and they went 11-1 and would have been in the SEC title game if not for losing to Georgia. So it happens. You could have looked at it. I think in retrospect, we also have to look back at the moment that all those seniors decided they were coming back. Bellamy, Carter, Chubb, Michelle, that was huge. On the field, it was huge. I mean, Georgia still has some talented tailbacks and outside linebackers behind them. But what if those guys had left? Would it have cost them a game between, at this point in the season? Probably. Dominic Sanders coming back. People kind of underplay. Aaron Davis was thinking about not coming back, and then he came back. So a lot of things have kind of come together that we can now look back on and say, yeah, there were signs it could be there. I mean, we knew this was going to be a talented team. We knew that this was potentially a pretty veteran team. But, everything has kind of come together and worked. So it is, the one thing we honestly didn't really know and expect was how would Kirby Smart in the year two effect happen? Like, was Kirby Smart one of these coaches who would make that jump from year one to year two, and people would kind of forget about year one not being good, or would he be one of those that, well, you know, he might be closer to an 8-5 coach? Well, right now it looks like he's one of those who made that really good year one to year two jump.
Somewhat amazingly, for the second week in a row, we're talking about a defensive back saying something negative about Georgia's passing game, i.e. Jake Fromm here. And, you know, for me, the energy about what Chris Lamon said about Georgia not being able to pass is not so much about somebody saying something bad about Georgia. It's I feel like Jake Fromm, and I know we talked about this last week, but it's sort of, you know, thrust back upon us again. I feel like he's criminally underrated at this point. He's having a much better season than even some of his opponents seem to want to give him credit for here. As we said, you know, leading the SEC in yards per attempt, at least he was coming in to a last week. I assume that he probably still is. You know, one of the highest completion percentages on passes, 15, 20 yards down the field. I mean, to me, it's amazing how he's not getting credit for having a really good year because Georgia's just not having to throw the ball that much.
Well, I thought the thing I keep thinking when I see these comments, and it's 2 weeks in a row now, is they're saying this midweek. You know, the Florida player said it Monday, not midweek, but, you know, after. It's not like these guys are being asked after the game. So these guys have had, presumably, a chance to do some research and prepare, and they're still saying it.
Right.
Which I want to be like, are their coaches not, you know, preparing them right? I mean, the bottom – I'm not going to sit here and say Jake Fromm is the best quarterback in the SEC, but it doesn't take much to figure out that he's throwing more than slant passes. I mean, look at those, you know, deep balls that he has thrown, and to look at the stats and see what you're talking about, leading the SEC in yards per attempt, which increasingly is, you know, the number that a lot of people look at, and, you know, the completion percentage being high. So to say they can't pass, and, you know, basically he's just throwing slant passes, my reaction is always, are your coaches not showing you the film? Like, are they trotting you out there to talk about the opponent without, like, you know, preparing you? I think it's still a legitimate question whether if another team shuts down Georgia's run game, limits it at least, and Jake Fromm has to throw the ball 30 or 35 times a game, whether he can do that well enough for Georgia to win. I think that's a legitimate question at this point. But the comments that are coming out of these last two guys are just so degrading that it's kind of like, whoa, you know, you're just talking after looking at like a stat sheet.
Right.
Your coaches need to coach you up a little more.
Yeah, it sounds more like a message board post than it does like, you know, the evaluated statement made from a guy that should have been watching some film. I completely agree with you on that. I love what you wrote about the Georgia offensive line this week, and I know you had a chance to kind of exchange a question with Kirby Smart on that. And, you know, obviously we can look and see with our own eyes the fact that it looks like it's playing better. The rushing numbers are significantly better, and I guess by way of a question, I mean, how common is this in college football for a unit? Now, it's different starters. You know, you had some guys move on, some guys kind of step up. So it's not all the same guys, but it's still the same program. I mean, this has to be somewhat unusual for an offensive line for the same team to get this much better over the course of just one calendar year, I would have to imagine.
Well, I can't say that I've got many points of kind of comparison, but when you mention it, I do think to like 2012, maybe at Georgia, they went from, what was it? Maybe in 2012, 2013, the O-line became really good in that period. And I remember the opener of, when was it that they opened against Clemson? And Colton Houston, if you remember, was the starting left tackle after not playing for 3 years because of the NCAA suspension, and they just struggled against Clemson. And I remember writing something saying, like, basically, this is getting old. You know, they can't fix this O-line, whatever they do. Well, by the end of that year, they were rolling. And you talked to Will Friend about it, and in 2014 they were really good. I remember talking to Will Friend about it in his, you know, very Alabama, you know, folksy kind of way. They're like, you know, it's just the tailbacks making us look good. You know, talking about Gurley and such. But, you know, there was something going on there, and it turns out the starting center, a underrated, you know, underhyped three-star from the Wesleyan school, is the starting center for the New England Patriots now.
Yeah.
So there are some things that happen. You know, are we undervaluing somebody on this line right now? That, I mean, Isaiah Wynn will you would think, end up at guard in the NFL, but, you know, maybe he does end up in the NFL. You look at, I mean, Andrew Thomas is the guy. He's kind of the John Theus of the line, like, you know, coming in as a true freshman, and the one true freshman is starting, and it's working. That kind of effect, when you think about it, happened here a few years ago with, when you look back on it, a line that didn't have a whole bunch of future pros. You know, the one who's sticking in the pros right now was undrafted. So, yeah, I mean, that's the parallel when I think about it right now.
Let me finish up with this. I really enjoyed the piece, and I believe it's up this morning at DogNation.com with Nick Chubb. You did a nice comparison between he and Saquon Barkley, the running back from Penn State. And in the piece, and I hope people read it for themselves, but one quote that I wanted to pull out, you know, Chubb kind of sort of pushed away the idea of Heisman chatter. He's sort of glad that's going to somebody else and not him. A lot of players that would say that, you know, you would think that's just what they think they're supposed to say. In Chubb's case, I find that to be pretty believable that, you know, kind of blending into a group of running backs at Georgia is probably a better fit for his personality than getting 35 carries a game and being at the forefront of a Heisman conversation. He might actually be a little uncomfortable in that role, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's never been a huge, like, spotlight guy. But he also got here in 2014 when Gurley and Marshall were here. And, you know, he was sitting behind Gurley, and then we all know what happened, and Chubb ends up the starter. So he's kind of been used to this whole time, like, sharing the spotlight. I think also you kind of knew that he was coming back for other reasons than, like, chasing the Heisman or chasing glory when he decided to come back, because one of the reasons I thought he and Michelle were likely to go was because of what we were just talking about, the offensive line. Offensive line wasn't good last year, wasn't opening up many holes, and they were losing three starters off of it. So I thought Chubb and Michelle would sit there and say, well, this isn't going to get better. Why would I come back? I'm not going to improve my stock next year. But whether they did have a little bit of faith in the line turning around, or they just didn't like where they were going to be. I mean, even Kirby Smart said that if any of those guys were projected to go in the first round, they wouldn't be back. Mm-hmm. So that was part of it, too. Or just the team aspect. You know, Chubb and Michelle came back for this reason. And that's another thing that Chubb said last night. This is what they envisioned when they decided to come back. This is why they came back. So you kind of knew that, you know, these weren't guys that needed that glory, either of them, and they're perfectly fine with the way things are playing out.
Really good stuff, Seth. Thanks for your time here on Dog Nation Daily. Look forward to your coverage of the Georgia-South Carolina game in Athens this weekend there at DogNation.com. Have a nice weekend. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Talk to you later.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff there from Seth Emerson here on Dog Nation Daily. Like his insight, kind of interesting to kind of get his thoughts on Georgia, the number one ranking, kind of where that program goes for here. And if you want more on the game against South Carolina on Saturday, let me remind you to also check out Planning for the Opponent at DogNation.com today. A look at the South Carolina Gamecocks, brought to you by friends at Georgia United Credit Union, their all-new unified checking account, which gives you the comforts of a free checking account, the options to earn more. It's a simple, convenient, rewarding checking account that fits your lifestyle. Visit GUCU.org for the terms and conditions that apply to this account, federally insured by NCUA. And as I'm speaking these words, wafting through our studio here at Dog Nation World Headquarters is a very special Kroger recipe. If you want to be the envy of your tailgate before we're done today, we'll show you the latest concoction here from Kroger. Really good stuff here on Dog Nation Daily. I ran out of time with Seth, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him about something that I wanted to discuss. You know, I mentioned yesterday, I'm impressed with what Will Muschamp's doing at South Carolina. I even suggested that, you know, of anybody that Florida might hire, there's nobody that's going to be better for Florida than what Will Muschamp would be were he to go back. You can't go home again, I get that. But Muschamp's a better coach, a better candidate than anybody Florida's going to hire. I somewhat half-kiddingly, half-serious said, if I was Florida, I'd rehire him again. But, you know, that ridiculous opinion aside, what I will say is when you look at South Carolina, the team that Georgia plays on Saturday, not only are they the second-best team in the SEC East right now, but sort of move into the future here a little bit, 2018. Do you think that Florida or Tennessee either one's going to be better than South Carolina? I mean, in 2019, maybe things change, but the way that the Gamecocks are recruiting right now, including, you know, as we've said before, you know, South Carolina may get a Rick Sandage, a player that George really liked to get. I mean, I think Muschamp is building something. not to be a legitimate threat to Georgia, because Georgia right now is a bit on a roll, both on the field and recruiting. But the future for South Carolina, I believe, right now is brighter than it is for either Florida or Tennessee. And I think it's going to make that Georgia-South Carolina game interesting in the next couple of years, especially given the fact that Kirby and Muschamp are, of course, really good friends. Moving on now to the rest of our SEC through here. And by the way, I hope you'll check us out on AT&T SEC Country Live at 3 p.m. Eastern time today on the SEC Country Facebook page. Something we got into yesterday on the show, my guess is we'll get into it more today. Speaking of Tennessee, is the weird thing going on here with Tennessee offensive lineman Brett Kendrick. Now, the Read Optional is a website, a college football blog. They reported a day or two ago, they got a text message basically from somebody close to the situation that said Tennessee knowingly played Kendrick when he had a concussion. That, you know, he was, you know, had to have the lights off in the room after the game, that he was basically, you know, had no idea what the final score was, and Tennessee left him in there, even though, according to the Read Optional, it knew that he had a concussion. Butch Jones has vehemently denied that again yesterday. John Curry, the athletic director, has spoken up about this. But this is kind of an ugly situation. There was some reporting at SECCountry.com that said that Kendrick refused to come out of the game. The question I have about that is, well, why was he even asked about his status? If there was reason to think that he had a concussion, why is Kendrick getting to make this decision for himself? It's kind of an ugly situation for Jones. And the problem for Tennessee, when you leave a coach employed who is not in good standing with the players that he's playing for, maybe some of the people in the university, this is the kind of thing that can happen. People with grievances are going to air them publicly. There is a cost associated with keeping a coach in place. And right now, unfortunately, I believe that Tennessee may be going through that. Now, I think that Jones is deserving of the benefit of the doubt on this. There's nothing I know about from his past that would lead me to believe he would knowingly play a player with a concussion. But, you know, if this did go down and Tennessee could have dismissed Jones a couple of weeks ago, I believe it's going to really regret not having done that. Speaking of interim coaches, Florida has one. It is Randy Shannon. And Randy Shannon said something kind of interesting yesterday. And by the time you hear this show, this may be done and settled. But I guess Shannon is considering going away from Felipe Franks, who just got beat, you know, up by Georgia all Saturday long last week, and going to Malik Zaire, who did get some action in the second half a week ago. Now, I guess this makes sense. I mean, after all, if you do believe that Matt Corral's coming to Florida next season, you don't really owe much to Felipe Franks right now. Why not give Zaire a chance to show what he can do, provide a spark? It only makes, I guess, Jim McElwain look worse if Zaire does indeed provide that spark. But nonetheless, at this point in time, you know, what do you have to lose? Interim coach wants new energy, new quarterback provides some of that as well. It could make for kind of an interesting soap opera there in Florida. Let me squeeze in a couple more quick stories here. So if you look online, a lot of the online sports books have Scott Frost listed as the odds-on favorite to be the next coach at Florida. He's well out in front of most of the other potential candidates. But there is potentially some competition here for Florida. Think about a place like Nebraska, Frost's alma mater, who currently does have a head coach, but the Nebraska AD is on a radio station in Lincoln yesterday talking about all the things that he knew about Scott Frost and saying it pretty glowingly. Makes you wonder if Nebraska, who is expected to be looking for its own coach here this offseason, if the alma mater pool would be greater for Frost back to Lincoln than what Florida can provide in terms of a compensation package and an opportunity. So the Gators, it's not clear who they view their favorite to be, who their top choice would be. But if it is Frost, Florida may have some legitimate conversation and some competition there for that. One final thing to get to. You know, in the aftermath of Georgia being ranked number one by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee on Tuesday night, Alabama being number two, the real discussion that pops up is Alabama's what's viewed as a soft schedule. Alabama, some people say, just hasn't played anybody. Does that put more pressure on Alabama to go out and blow out LSU on Saturday? LSU is a ranked team by the selection committee. They're number 19, but Alabama's about a 3-touchdown favorite. It's one of those things that most people say, hey, Alabama's got it made. They get the pressure off them. They get to say they're number two. But the criticism of Alabama may stick here a little bit unless Alabama beats up on some teams like LSU. We'll see how that goes. We'll talk about it more on AT&T SEC Country Live today, and we'll make that your SEC Let me try that one more time. We'll make that your SEC through. All right, now here on Dog Nation Daily. You know, from time to time we do this. You know, before the big Georgia games, including all the home games in Athens, Kroger does a really cool thing where, you know, if you see Roxy Jackson or some of our folks out and about in the Athens area on Saturdays, not only can you get one of these Kroger scratch-off cards and your chance to be a real big winner from Kroger with the scratch-off cards, we've also got these Kroger recipe cards as well. And, you know, last week we had some fun in honor of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We kind of made some of those citrus beer sangrias here. We kind of had a nice time with that. A little more food related today, but if you want to be the envy of your tailgate, Kroger's got a great way for you to do that. Come on in here. We got a really cool thing here. First of all, look at this very nice platter here. This is fantastic. This is probably nicer than I deserve here on Dog Nation Daily, but find Roxy in Athens on Saturday. She'll give you one of these recipe cards courtesy of Kroger, and today we're making the grilled chicken kebabs. Now, we have the ingredients. We've got some Pam cooking spray. We got the teriyaki stuff, the sauce from Kroger. You got your peppers here. You got your rice ready to go. You got to have the skewer sticks ready to go for that, some grape tomatoes. So here are all the ingredients, and right here it tells you all what you got to do on that. On the back of the card from Kroger, it also tells you how to do this. Prep time, just 10 minutes. The cook time itself, just 15 minutes, and it serves four people. Now, how'd you like to be bringing this out at your tailgate? You know, you want something kind of impressive here? Take a look at this. Nice little bed of rice, the skewers right here. You got the chicken. Nice colorful situation here. I mean, this is exactly what you need if you want to make it look good at your tailgate. And, of course, many of you, that's exactly what game day Saturdays on Athens are all about. You want to have the best tailgate. Well, the best way to do that is an ultimate tailgate recipe courtesy of our friends at Kroger. And listen, we know the deal here. Georgia is the number one team in the country right now. That means the tailgating has got to be up to par with the number one team in the country. So if you want to have the number one tailgate to go along with the number one team in the country, trust my friends from Kroger on that, the ultimate tailgate recipe, the grilled chicken kebab. It's going to look great. And if you're saying, yeah, but BA, I want this, but I don't quite have time to get all this taken care of. Listen, Kroger's got you covered on that front as well. Kroger Click List. Been telling you about this for a while. Jeff Sintel and I even did a video about this, for goodness sakes. Go to Kroger.com. Find out more information about the Kroger Click List. You can order all your ingredients for your tailgate, whatever you're going to cook up, online. Drive into Kroger. A smiling, friendly Kroger attendant will meet you right there. You don't even have to get out of your car. They'll give you all your stuff, and you can have the quickest, easiest, most convenient way to shop for groceries. It is Kroger Click List online, Kroger.com. Make sure you look for Roxy Jackson here this week. You can get one of those Kroger Ultimate Tailgate recipes from her. But wait, that's not all. You can also get a Kroger scratch-off card and your chance to be a big winner courtesy of Kroger. We got all that going on for you in Athens on Saturday. One more thing here before we wrap up the show. Speaking of Saturday in Athens, I saw some message board posts about this, and I was kind of curious about this. So some people were saying how great it's going to be when Georgia is out there on Saturday and they get ready to run on the field, and you hear the music playing, and the guy, you know, Brooke Whitmire, the stadium PA announcer, comes over the loudspeaker and says, "You're number one ranked Georgia Bulldogs." In fact, we can go ahead and play the fight song, get ready to wrap up the show here today. When he says the number one ranked Georgia Bulldogs on Saturday. And, you know, are y'all like me? Have you noticed this year that I don't think they've been saying Georgia's ranking, Brooke Whitmire, the PA announcer in particular, when Georgia runs on the field? And the reason why I bring that up now as sort of a relevant topic to kind of close out our show today is I'm kind of curious just how much acknowledgement there'll be of Georgia being number one in the stadium on Saturday. Now, my guess is some of the graphics on the video board will have a number one next to Georgia's name and things like that. But in terms of sort of verbal recognition, a PA announcer saying you're number one ranked Georgia Bulldogs, I'm wondering if Kirby Smart's even going to allow them to do that. And maybe I'm wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure they've not been saying number three ranked, number five ranked, number nine ranked, whatever Georgia's been ranked. They haven't been saying that thus far this season. So maybe that's something to think about on Saturday. Pay attention to that. Will we see any kind of acknowledgement of Georgia being number one? I know if Kirby Smart had his wish, the answer would be no. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.